This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu. You're listening to Enterprise BizBytes. Today, joining me is
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Good afternoon, Arvind.
Hello.
We are talking about cybersecurity today, and it's I'm just reading what we're about to share with you. It's quite scary. But before we get into that story, what is our question today?
So over on Twitter, we're asking you, what is your biggest cybersecurity fear? Let us know. Our options are unsecured websites, ransomware, and phishing.
All right. Okay. Of course, you can also let us know your thoughts via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, right? And I'm sure by now you know phishing is not spelled with the F, right? So this is a story. At least 90 Malaysian government websites are still considered not secure despite the government's announcement on conducting cybersecurity audits on them 5 months ago. What other cybersecurity trends and risks do Malaysians need to look out for, and how can people and businesses protect themselves? So Malaysia Kini's special report in late July 2021 found that at least 175 of nearly 700 government websites were not secure, which experts warn could lead to personal data breaches and either cybersecurity risks. So this is in July. 175 or nearly 700 would be about 20% of these government websites, right? So websites are identified as not secure when the URL begins with HTTP instead of HTTPS. Following that, the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Commission, MCMC, stated that a cybersecurity audit would be conducted on these websites. And 5 months after the announcement, Malaysia Kini revisited these websites on December 28, 2021, found that the security status of 90 websites remain unchanged.
90 is a huge number.
So 20% weren't secure, 10% paid attention, and so, you know, a little more than 10% weren't.
So the websites include those of the Enforcement Agency Integrity Commission, or EAIC, the Public Complaints Bureau of the Prime Minister's Office, Istana Budaya, Hospital Kuala Lumpur, which is scary, and websites of local councils and various states. Of the 90 websites, 8 of them, such as the Kedah State Government Portal and Shalam City Council, or MBSA, still contain malicious elements, phishing and spam attacks, based on the analyst's visual result on Virus Total, which is an online tool for malware detection. So 6 of those websites, such as the website of Sultan Ismail Hospital, National Hydraulic Research Institute, or NAHRIM, and the Office of Sabah Federal Secretary, or PSUP Sabah, were no longer available.
Accessible. So nonetheless, the government has, during the same period, upgraded security status 76 websites from HTTP to HTTPS, while removing spam and malicious elements from 4 websites. The websites include the National Palace, Defense Ministry, and the COVID-19 Malaysia monitoring site.
Yeah, the URLs of some of the websites have been changed to reflect the upgraded security status. The websites include the MySMS portal, the Institute for Rural Advancement, or INFRA, Department of Biosafety, or JBK, and some district councils in Terengganu and Sabah. While some websites have upgraded to HTTPS, visitors on the HTTP websites were not redirected to the HTTPS sites automatically. The websites, among others, were those of the Anti-Doping Agency, or ADAMAS, National Youth and Sports Department, or JBSN, Kuala Terengganu City Council, or MBKT, and Federal Territories Sports Council, MSWP.
So we have to ask, why is this the case?
When you go to websites, Frida, like, do you, like, normally the browsers, right, they will normally tell you if you have, like, a secured connection, if the website is not secure. What is your first reaction when you see something like that?
Okay, so for me, when I go, especially banks, right, I will pay attention when it's banks, like, in, you know, you're logging in, everything. So I'm very particular when it comes to banks. That's the main thing. But I would just never assume with, you know, government websites. It's wrong of me. You should never assume that it would not be secure.
Yeah,
right? I mean, it's scary when you talk about hospitals, when you talk about certain things. No, I mean, Lord forbid the EPF or stuff like that, right? So you know, you wonder about these things.
Because these things, their databases carry like so much vital information, so much private information and personal stuff that shouldn't be out there. So these should be the most secured of secured websites. For me, it's an immediate tab close. Like if I open a website, the moment my browser alerts me or my antivirus alerts me that there's something wrong, like it's an unsecured connection, it's a HTTP, it's an immediate, no questions asked, close tab. And then investigate later.
Right, right. Or so I mean, I don't know if a lot of people pay attention to it, right? Or not, right? I mean, so it's the little things, right? Because you would have the antivirus. When you go to these websites, I don't know with the government websites, whether if it's HTTPS, I don't know if you need to go to any of them, like the IGN or what have or whatever that was listed out there. Mm-hmm. Whether, you know, if that has that show is shown to you, you immediately close the tab.
Immediately close the tab. Also, when it comes to payments, I prefer to do it on like third-party platforms. Mm. So there used to be a bunch of websites where they had their own payment gateways and stuff. Right. Nowadays, with e-wallets, I'm assuming it's a bit safer because then they depend on the e-wallet platform and the e-wallet security. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Right.
But I'm guessing that when it sort of rides on the e-banking systems or the e-wallet systems, then you're using their security measures.
Right.
And it's a lot safer than going through platforms that you don't recognize.
Right. We're hoping that they'll be more secure, right? We're hoping that people like, you know, the e-wallets and the banks would take this a little bit more seriously. And so you want to go through that venue, that avenue instead. So this is something that, you know, it's kudos to Malaysia Kini for doing that and highlighting it. Mm-hmm. And then, no, obviously, there was some action done, but not much after that. I mean, there's still 90 that hasn't been updated, right? So after this, we'll be hearing a more general take on the approach to cybersecurity from the Financial Services Information Sharing Analysis Centre, otherwise known as FSISAC, here in Malaysia and in the Asia Pacific region. We'll be speaking to Christoph Barrel after this, so stay tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Enterprise Biz Bytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
This is Enterprise and Enterprise Biz Bytes. Good afternoon, Frida Liu here together with Arvind Yuvaraj. We're talking about cybersecurity and we have a question, a poll that's happening. What is that question, Arvind?
So we're asking you, what is your biggest cybersecurity fear? Is it unsecured websites, ransomware, phishing, or something else?
All right. And we'll look at the final poll results after that. So we're talking about, this came about because a report from Malaysia Kini in July said 175 out of 700 government websites had websites that were not secure, and that being HTTPS and HTTP, right? And of course, we just want to hear from an expert right now, and the Financial Services Information Sharing Analysis Center, or FSISAC, is the only global cyber intelligence sharing community solely focused on financial services. And we have as APAC Managing Director Christoph Barrel on the line to tell us about the state of cybersecurity in Malaysia and the Asia Pacific region. Christoph, thanks for being with us. How does Malaysia and the Asia Pacific region in general treat cybersecurity at the moment?
Based on what we covered in our latest 2021 Cyber Trends and Threats Review, cybersecurity is now a key business priority, given the fact that businesses digitize quickly and increase reliance on third-party suppliers. In the financial services sector, which again, we know well, this is even more critical because financial institutions hold vast quantities of sensitive consumer data, such as bank account credentials and personal data. Cyber threat actors employing ransomware may target financial institutions because they think they are more able and likely to pay a ransom. However, with the digital shift that was already underway, but then accelerated with the pandemic, some firms in APAC may find that their investment in cybersecurity defenses, including third-party risk management, is lagging behind their IT infrastructure, which, as a result, leave them more vulnerable to cyber attacks. This trend is also intensified by organizational challenges in APAC, like a severe shortage of cybersecurity talent, typically. Demand for cybersecurity professionals especially those with advanced technical skills such as cloud, data science, and machine learning, far outpaces supply. And in addition, the pandemic has restricted the movement of people to and around the region.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Christoph, so what is the state of the current cyber threat landscape in Malaysia?
From January to November 2021, a total of about 9,000 cybersecurity incidents were reported to Cyber 999, a cybersecurity incident response center run by the Malaysian government. Of these incidents, the top three categories were fraud, intrusion, and malicious code. In addition, a report from Trend Micro found that for the first half of the year, Malaysia placed 28 in the world in a ranking of countries most targeted by ransomware attacks. The Malaysian government has stepped up efforts to navigate an increasingly diverse and sophisticated cyber threat landscape. In 2020, they launched the Malaysia Cybersecurity Strategy, or MCSS, with a budget of 1.8 billion ringgit, or about 430 million USD, to increase national cybersecurity preparedness. Cybersecurity Malaysia is the government agency charged with protecting the nation against cyber threats. Earlier this year, the agency launched the Cyber CASA initiative. It takes a holistic ecosystem approach in protecting against cyber threats that are increasingly complex, dynamic, and also sophisticated. The initiative places a strong emphasis on intelligence sharing. Intelligence sharing, actually, is how the financial services sector collaborates to defend against cyber threats. Other industries do the same. Since no institution can anticipate all threats all the time, firms share information about threats, such as indicators of compromise or IOCs, or signs that an attack is being attempted. They also share best practices for preventing and defending against cyber attacks. I think it's critical for Malaysian institutions to share both at the national level and also at the global level, right, since cyber criminals operate across borders, and an attack that starts in one country may obviously quickly spread to others.
Right. Of course, they work 24/7, right? And Christoph, while obviously all sectors should take cybersecurity seriously, which sectors are being the most targeted and have faced the biggest or most threats?
All sectors clearly are facing an increase in cyber attacks. FSISAC represents the financial sector, which has fared better than many others, considering how lucrative financial institutions are as targets. It's primarily because the sector has a long history of robust cybersecurity, both because of regulatory demand and also because our business is dependent on customer trust. That said, with everything going digital now, financial firms are holding increasing quantities of sensitive user data, as you may expect, especially financial data. The financial services industry in APAC is extremely competitive, which has meant that advances in financial technology have happened even faster here than elsewhere in the world. And as I mentioned before, these rapid advancements sometimes outpaces concurrent investment in cybersecurity to protect this new financial infrastructure, which creates opportunities for cyber criminals. Further, this rapid digitization has increased reliance on third-party providers, many of whom do not have the same legacy of strong cybersecurity. As we have seen with many supply chain incidents over the past year, third-party cyber risk has the potential to impact financial institutions. As many firms use obviously the same suppliers, the industry faces an additional challenge of concentration risk, where an attack on one supplier could impact multiple firms, either regionally or globally. One issue specific to the region is long dwell time, which is the time it takes between when vulnerabilities are discovered and when they are patched or fixed. In 2020, the average dwell time in APAC was 76 days, which is actually three times longer than the global median of 24 days. So that's a big difference.
Right. Yeah. So what are some current and emerging threats to look out for?
As we have mentioned in our review, the top threats across the region are first, ransomware, where basically a cyber criminal holds your systems and or data hostage. Ransomware is a growing threat because, sadly, it's a great business model. Ransomware groups have figured multiple revenue streams, such as extorting the victim to prevent their publishing the stolen data online, auctioning off the data on the dark web, and selling ransomware kits that anyone, literally anyone, can buy, no special cyber expertise required. Second, third-party risk, where an attack on a supplier allows criminals to access your systems as well. This has grown exponentially as the financial sector races to digitize, since most firms use various software and infrastructure vendors in their IT systems. Third, DDoS attacks, or distributed denial of service, where attackers bombard your systems with traffic to tie them up. These attacks have become shorter in duration in the last year, but this could mean that they're actually part of a broader attack and are used to create noise on the network to distract from other types of attacks happening at the same time. And fourth, resurgence of banking trojans. So that's a type of malware that actually helps criminals gain access to data and systems and install backdoors across banking infrastructure. Banking trojans are designed to obtain access credentials to online bank accounts or to manipulate users and hijack control of live online banking sessions. Both can target individual users as well as firms, and both are on the rise here in APAC, with the Philippines being hit especially hard.
All right. You know, naturally, during the pandemic, Christoph, we all had to rely on technology for work purposes in some way, shape or form. How did this affect the number and severity of cyber threats?
Indeed, the COVID-19 pandemic has had significant implications for cybersecurity because worldwide social restrictions led to most companies shifting to a work-from-home model, with many continuing today. This has been an increase in firms relying on digital services and other third-party IT vendors, which in turn has vastly increased the attack surface for cyber criminals, which now have a far greater number of potential targets for their attacks. In a poll that we conducted last year in 2020, 75% of cybersecurity professionals say that remote work drove a dramatic change in financial firms' cyber programs. Here in Malaysia, an October 2021 report in Malaysian newspaper, The Sun Daily, say that Malaysia could lose 51 billion ringgit,
wow.
51 billion ringgit due to cybersecurity incidents alone. And perhaps even more disturbingly, 84% of SMEs in Malaysia have been compromised in one way or another by a cyber attack or an incident, while 76% have suffered more than one attack. I think those numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah. What is the impact of cybersecurity breaches on the end consumers?
Recent attacks have shown the often serious consequences that cybersecurity breaches and attacks can have on end consumers who entrust their personal data to companies and organizations. For example, recently in Singapore, an attack on a local telco resulted in the leak of personal information belonging to nearly 80,000 subscribers. The information included copies of the subscribers' ID cards, leaving them at risk of identity theft, among other potentially damaging outcomes. In the event that a similar breach occurs to a large financial institution, the consequences could be significant, with highly sensitive consumer data, such as credentials to bank accounts, potentially at risk.
Right. And so how can businesses better protect themselves and improve their cybersecurity?
While it's impossible to completely eliminate the risk of attack, firms can do a lot, I think, to minimize risk and block would-be attackers. I'm happy to list out a few principles they should follow. First, adopt a zero-trust mindset with third-party vendors. Third-party risk is a significant threat vector due to the digital shift and many firms' reliance on external service providers that may not have robust cyber defenses in place. Your overall strategy, I think, should seek to maximize cybersecurity on your side of all interactions with third parties, minimizing the chances that third-party vulnerabilities impact your systems and data. Second, become a member of a global intelligence sharing organization. Given the global interrelation of business today, and the cross-border nature of cyber threats, no one firm can anticipate all cyber threats all the time. Therefore, it remains critical to participate in global intelligence sharing on a trusted platform. Following the highly publicized attacks this year on SolarWinds, Axelion, and Kaseya, these firms used FSISAC, actually, as a platform to quickly reach the entire financial sector with timely information on the vulnerabilities and how to mitigate them. It also enabled financial institutions to ask questions and interact with all participants, gaining the resulting knowledge. This helped the industry act quickly to limit damage. Third, utilize a data vault for highly sensitive or critical data. With the rapid rise of ransomware attacks, as we discussed earlier, firms should invest in a data vault that is not connected to main systems or backups. By safekeeping critical data offline, firms can not only ensure that disruption and losses are kept to a minimum, but also retain valuable leverage over their attackers and protect themselves from extortion. And finally, fourth, reinforce existing defenses. With the resurgence of old cyber criminal tactics like DDoS attacks and Trojans, reinforcing current defenses is more important than ever. This includes fortifying endpoints, focusing on email security, upskilling staff to minimize human error, and securing networks. Firms must also ensure that senior management and boards position cybersecurity as a top priority to secure sufficient investment.
Last question, Christoph. So in a worst-case scenario, how can businesses recover from a cyber attack?
Mitigation and recovery measures depend on the type and scale of attack. The best way to prepare is to do exercises, simulating various types of attacks, such as ransomware or business email compromise, ahead of time so that everyone involved knows what to do in the event of an actual attack. Being prepared and building the muscle memory to respond will ensure everyone from the board to communication staff can respond quickly and effectively. In fact, FSISAC runs this type of exercises for financial institutions around the world.
Right. Thank you. And that was Christoph Barrell from FSISAC talking about what we can do. And, you know, a couple of things that he said, right? You know, it's of course, you don't want your information leaked, whether it's through a telco or a bank. But like even if you've got a website in your business, right? God forbid, we were just talking last year together with Audrey. Like for us, it's our podcast, right? That gets shared on our website, right? You know, I'm not encouraging anyone here to do anything, but just this is your asset, right? So and your form of business, that sort of thing, it really has an implication. What was he said? 51, but through ransomware, what, 51 million?
Also, I love the fact that, we've spoken about this zero trust policy many times in the last 1 year alone. And again, Christoph mentioned, you know, apply a zero trust policy. I think that's very important because that's something that lands on us, right? It's as the consumer, we have to always be suspicious of where we're putting our details and how we're putting those details online. And again, what kind of platforms we're using to make payments. So just to guard or safeguard ourselves.
Right. Okay. So yes, we're asking this question, Arv, and what are the final results?
So over on Twitter, after a quick refresh, we're asking you, what is your biggest cybersecurity fear? Ransomware got 43.8%, highest vote, 28.8% for phishing, 26% for unsecured websites, and 1.4% for others, but no one said what those others are.
Right, there's so many things, right? I think like we all has always have to be careful. Things like changing your passwords and all that, you know, it's a constant reminder. It's like brushing your teeth, right? Or changing your underwear. Do it constantly.
Do it constantly. Yeah.
Do it constantly. Yes, you've been listening to Enterprise BizBytes. Of course, we'll be talking about cybersecurity. Join me again tomorrow. I'll be with Christine Wong tomorrow. And you've been listening to Enterprise BizBytes here. What advice from the Blow Monkeys coming up next? It doesn't have to be that way. So be careful with, you know, your digital assets. BFM 89.9.
Enterprise BizBytes was presented by Allianz Malaysia, empowering businesses to build confidence in tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.